Who knows what Jay-Z, J.K. Rowling, Bill Gates and Oprah Winfrey all have in common? Okay, I will tell you then. They have all overcome failure in one shape or form to go on to gain success in their respective careers. Welcome to My Perfect Failure. Join us as we delve into the world of our perfect failures. We will interview, explore, and discuss how our perfect failures can lead us to success. Join us and tune in.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of My Perfect Failure. Today, I have another amazing guest for you, so I'm super excited. So my guest today is a mum of seven, a successful business owner and world record holder as the first woman to climb the second highest summit on each of the seven continents. So she now spends her time inspiring others to create thriving businesses and lasting legacies of their own. She shares her story and strategies through success through her book, Breakproof, Seven Strategies to Build Resilience and Achieve Your Life Goals, and her Seek Summit podcast, which I listen to, which is brilliant, programs and signature talks. You're about to learn more about how she elevates devoted and determined entrepreneurs to go beyond a life of success to a life of significance. So a very warm welcome to My Perfect Failure, Jen Drummond. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for having me today.
So since we connected, I was counting the days to our discussion because your journey is a pretty remarkable one. And we're going to get into that in a second. And for everybody listening, this particular episode is called Failure and Making More Possible. But where I wanted to start, a large section of our audience, we kind of had a little chat beforehand. A lot of our audience are entrepreneurs, people that have got some type of passion and they're living their life and they're pursuing that. And I'm always intrigued around how people found their entrepreneurship. Was it something that just happened? Was it a passion that they had from an early age? Or because, you know, I guess it all happened for different reasons for different people. So I was keen to ask you that question, if I may start there.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. So I started my entrepreneur journey right after college. And I will say it happened because of an experience in college. I was going to school at a little school called Hope College in Holland, Michigan. And Holland, Michigan is the manufacturer capital of office furniture for the United States. And so when I was at school, I did an internship for one of these companies where we were making furniture chairs, right? Like the office chairs that you would sit on at work. And we had 200 temporary labor people that would come in to help carry the overflow of what was happening in the plant. We could not make these chairs fast enough. These people had to work 10 to 12 hour days. We begged them to come in on Saturdays and Sundays. And as much as we could get them to work, we needed them. Fast forward a little bit and Y2K happens. So now all of a sudden, nobody's buying office furniture anywhere. That industry kind of blew up. And this company needs to let go of these 200 employees that were kind of babysitting. And I do not know to this day why I quit. But I stayed on and I helped let go 200 people and the stories that they came in with. But I worked weekends, but I stayed late for you. But this is my paycheck. Like, how am I going to make it work? What do I do? And I felt horrible. Mm. And I realized at that point, I would never be able to work for somebody and be able to give it my all because I wouldn't trust them to give me a job and have that job be stable.
Yeah.
And so I knew I needed to be an entrepreneur because I wanted to be responsible for whether if I had a job or not, not let that be somebody else's decision. Yeah. And so I would say that was my first experience that launched me onto the entrepreneurial path. I was in college and a friend of mine graduated a year ahead of me and he took a job as a financial advisor at a local company. And he's like, Jen, you need to graduate and take a job here. You're expensive. This job could like help you make really good money and afford your lifestyle. I'm like, okay, I'll take a job as a financial advisor. They were 1099-ing the reps at that time. So I went to my college counselor. I said, hey, can you like mix my credits together and let me graduate? And he's like, yeah, you just need to take a couple courses this summer. And I said, okay, fine. I went to my parents. I said, hey, I got offered a job. School's willing to let me graduate early. What do you guys think? My parents are like, that's 100% okay. You just have to work at that job no matter what for a year. I'm like, okay, I can do that. Like, no problem. Why would that be hard? And so I graduate from school. I show up the first day at work as a financial advisor. And I remember going into the front office. I'm like, hi, I'm Jen. I'm the new financial advisor. And the lady up front, she's like, oh, fantastic. Over there is a table with a phone and a phone book. That's where you're going to start your day. Wow. I'm like, oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm not a cold caller. I'm the financial advisor. You must have me confused with somebody. And she's like, honey, it's the same thing. And I was like, what? So I went over to sit at my desk and I started cold calling. And boy, did I want to quit. For those first 3 weeks of work, I went home every day crying. I'd never heard the word no so many times in my life. I was afraid to call my parents, but I definitely wanted to quit. I called the school like, hey, do you think I could get back in and take some more credits like and do whatever? And they're like, sweetheart, you're graduated. You'd have to re-register and everything else. Everything's already started. I'm sorry, whatever. And so I was like, okay, I have 49-ish more weeks left. I'm just going to have to make the most of it. And I'm so glad that happened, that I failed to ask the right questions, to fail to understand like what I was truly stepping into. And I just was like, I made this commitment. So I'm going to commit to the commitment. I'm going to stay here for a year. And when my energy went to how do I make this successful because I'm stuck here versus how do I get out, I started to have success.
Yeah, that's it. Really interesting, isn't it? When we have that mindset shift, because there isn't really another option. We just have to make, I guess, the most of a difficult situation. And because I guess in your case, you wanted to succeed if you're going to have to spend a year doing that particular job.
Yeah. You know, I'm like, okay, I'm cold calling. I can either make 5 hours a day of cold calling hell, or I can figure out like how to win at it and how to make it work to my advantage because I'm doing it. So if I'm doing it, what can I do? And I kind of turned it into a game. I said, okay, I started keeping track of the numbers. If I made 100 dials, 97 people would say no, 3 people would say yes, and 1 person typically would become a client. And that person that became a client, I'd make maybe anywhere between $1,000 and $3,000 on. And so then I started using that number as saying, okay, if I got a no, well, I made $15 on that no. Well, I made $30 on that no, and then $45 and then $60. And so I started like saying I got paid for my no's because I got paid for dialing, even though the only time I would get paid is when I actually landed a client. But if I averaged that out, that's how it worked. And then I also did funny things. I bought one of those guns that had a foam ball at the end that was attached to the thing by a string. And so anytime somebody said no to me, I'm like, no to you. And I'd shoot them. And I like took back my power. Yeah. I said, okay, we both can say no. You're not the only one who gets to say no. And then I put that little sponge ball back on. And I did that. And I ended up having a very successful first year.
So you must have learned so much about yourself. And did you also learn that you're adept at sales and you were quite resilient?
Yeah. I mean, you just learn that you can, in sales, you can't take things personal.
Yeah.
Right. It's just 100% a numbers game. And the minute you click into that numbers game, you just start playing the game and then you have success because you're in the game. And eventually that success gives you momentum to actually like the job. And I ended up making more money there that first year out of college than I would have probably anywhere else.
Yeah.
So that makes it a little bit easier too, right? If you're making money, it's easier to suffer through the pain.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so just to share the pain, I've definitely worked in roles where cold calling was part of the gig. And I know how challenging it is and how demoralizing it can be. And to your point, totally a numbers game. You definitely have more lows. But to your point, you don't take it personally. But if you're committed and you learn from every no, then you get these amazing wins and they kind of balance out the kind of the overwhelming no's that we get.
Yeah, Definitely. And it just gives you momentum, right? Like you're in one number, it's a numbers game. So the longer you're in the game, 52 weeks is a long time to be cold calling, but it gives you a lot of momentum to build from. Mm-hmm. So I built up a decent book of business. I was with that firm for a few years and I decided to go out on my own. I'm like, I don't need to be under this firm. I have enough clients. I can do my own thing. I've been in the industry long enough. This is going to work. So I remember leaving. And I remember like I wanted this office building to look a certain way. I wanted my name on the outside of it and like a secretary and a color copy machine. I just remember thinking of the things that would like make me feel like we were successful and doing well. Yeah. Well, when I broke off and I started putting all my energy into the things instead of what I was supposed to be doing, I had a huge dip in revenue.
Okay.
Right? Because revenue is based on what you're generating. And so all of a sudden, one day we got the color copy machine bill. I'm like, oh man, well, this is not going to go well. We need to like turn things around. I need to start bringing in clients in the door again. And at that time, I had a client that was the CEO of a credit union. And when we were doing her review meeting, she's like, hey, we're thinking of offering services to our membership. The laws have changed. And now credit unions are able to offer investment services just like banks are to the people that go there. I'm like, oh, well, I can do that. I can do that for you for sure. And she's like, oh, I never even thought about that. Like, why don't you interview? So I interviewed and I landed the contract. And it was interesting because my idea of what the business was supposed to look like, right? My name on the statements, mm-hmm. the name on the office building, all that kind of stuff. Now I was stepping into a relationship where I white labeled the program. So we named it the credit union's name, Wealth Management. So my name was nowhere to be seen except as the advisor. Yeah. Yeah. And we did business in their office and the referrals came from their tellers and different things like that. And that business went gangbusters. And I just remember thinking to myself, thank goodness the other thing didn't work out. Yeah. Because if it had been going well, would I have been open to this opportunity? And look at how well this opportunity took off and how I had to pivot and be like, okay, this is not what I thought it was going to look like, but this is what it looks like. And this is what it's working. This is what's working. So I need to go down this path of success.
Yeah. Yeah. So it ties in with the title of this episode, Failure in Making More Possible. When things don't go according to plan, I think sometimes it can be very easy for us to throw the towel in totally. But if we just look for the breadcrumbs that invariably exist, there's invariably another door is opening, but it's just making sure that we keep our heads above the parapet.
Yes. Yeah. And just always being open to being curious. How can this look? How would this work? And when it does start to work, do you have the resources to shift into that and double down and make it work better and do even more?
Yeah, totally, totally. And just around the entrepreneurship bit, when you got into that, had anybody in your family or any friends, were anybody that you knew particularly close entrepreneurs?
I mean, my dad was self-employed. Okay. He was a furniture sales rep. So he sold furniture to different furniture companies. But that was the closest thing I had encountered, right? Yeah. I took some classes in college. I stayed in touch with my business law teacher. So he had given me advice. I highly recommend when you get into these arenas to have mentors. People have been there before, have done it before, or have advice. They can just help see things that you don't even know are things you need to look out for.
Yeah, I think mentors is massively valuable because we can never do everything alone. We do need, we can lean into somebody else and how we learn them, then definitely can be a game changer.
Oh, 100%. Definitely.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask, I can't remember if it was your podcast I was listening to or maybe somewhere you've been interviewed, but I loved your answer. I think somebody was talking to you about entrepreneurship, and I guess I'm fast forwarding a little bit roundabout till today, or I'm not sure when you sort of pivoted, but I think they asked you something around entrepreneurship, and I can't remember the question specifically, but you were kind of like, I wanted to create a business where ultimately I could have a business there, but I wouldn't have to work. I would be able to go, I would be able to create something where I could go away and live my best life. And I love the answer, because I think sometimes when we look at creating our own business, sometimes we could become a slave to that. And I was inspired by your answer, because it was almost like that's why we should be doing it, so we can create our own business. But ultimately, we don't want to be a slave to it. We want to be able to live, have the independence of maybe having a little bit more freedom. So maybe you can expand on that.
Yeah, definitely. So the beautiful thing about the investment service industry is that it is a front-loaded career, right? So it takes a lot of work in the beginning to get it up and running. But when you do an assets under management business model, that means, I mean, it's kind of like the new subscription models that people are running today in different programs. But that means when the assets are on your books, you're getting paid. So you're getting paid to manage them. You're getting paid to grow them. You're not just getting paid to find them, right? You're getting paid to maintain them and take care of them. And so that's an industry that was very lucrative to me, because I like taking care of people. I don't always want to be headhunting for the next deal. I want to be taking care of the people that I have, and make sure that I'm getting paid to do that. And so as you get more clients and build your book of business and have people that help you, I started having children. I'm like, well, my goal was to be a stay-at-home mom. Well, I can't run the business at the level I was and be a stay-at-home mom. So then I started hiring out positions that I was doing in the business, so I had more time to be at home. And eventually I hired myself out of a job entirely and then became a stay-at-home mom. And I feel like when we are entering the entrepreneurship journey, that we're looking at it as a business. Will this run without me?
Yeah.
If something happened to me, is the business still able to operate?
Yeah.
And who am I needing to put in place to make sure that can happen? And I think that's a very important question as we're building our businesses out and we're developing where we're going. How are you doing it so that you can scale and step away instead of just having a very demanding job that you also control the income on?
Yeah. And I think that's a really good tip for anybody listening that is an entrepreneur, particularly if you're starting out as an entrepreneur. I guess it doesn't really matter, even if you are an entrepreneur and you're quite sort of immersed in, I guess, your stage. It's a lovely tip to maybe think about how you can make your business exist when you maybe want to take a 6-month sabbatical, or you might want to do something. And people invariably, if you don't have that at the moment, then maybe you can think about how you can implement that, because otherwise we just become a slave. And I guess if we become a slave to our business, then actually will we enjoy it the way that we want to enjoy it? It might nip at our passion. So that's a remarkable start to your career. So the entrepreneurial career happened, and obviously you've got 7 amazing children. But 2018, that was a significant moment for you. Maybe you can expand on that for me and everybody listening.
Definitely. So I was a stay-at-home mom. I had a little bit of guilt, to be honest with you, because I didn't love it as much as I thought I would. I really like being in the business environment and having adult conversations that are strategizing and solving problems. You definitely have problems with kids, but it's just different. And I miss that adult interaction. But I didn't know how to get out of it. I felt kind of guilty that I didn't want to be a stay-at-home mom. 2018, I get into a horrific car crash. They have no clue how I live, to be honest with you. Like, it was that bad. And I remember walking away from that crash thinking, wow, I do not get to choose when I die, but I sure get to choose how I live. And right now, I'm not choosing to live. I'm choosing to get by. And I want to change that. So 2019 became this big year of reflection. And I made this huge bucket list that'd probably take me 4 lifetimes to complete. But it was all the things that I wanted to do, because no longer was I afraid of failing or like looking like an idiot or what will people think. Yeah. I was afraid of like, what happens if I died? Like, what happens if next year is my last year? Like, what are things that I want to do, experience, explore, try on this planet? Because we have this huge universe full of activities and things and opportunities that I was just waiting to take advantage of until my kids got older. And that car accident was like, you don't have time to wait. Like, none of us have time to wait. We have today. And so what can we do today that if we were to lose our life, we'd be like, oh, I still, at least I lived. At least I was doing things that filled my heart up. And so interesting on that list, one of the things was climb a mountain. And I was turning 40 in 2020. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to climb a mountain for my 40th birthday and launch this next decade of life with this big mountain climb. So I'd asked some friends that were in the industry, if you could climb one mountain in the whole world, what mountain would it be? And the general consensus was a mountain named Ama de Blom. I'm like, okay, tell me about it. So Ama de Blom is located in the Himalayas and means the mother's necklace. It's the Paramount Pictures logo. And I thought, perfect, I'll climb Ama de Blom. I wanted to see the Himalayas, all that kind of stuff. And so I'm training for the mountain, and then COVID happens, right? And COVID has all of us at home, homeschooling kids, not going anywhere, like all that kind of stuff. And one of my kids was struggling with his math homework. And I remember saying, like, listen, buddy, we do hard things. Like, you've got this. Don't worry. He looks at me and he goes, if we do hard things, why are you climbing a mountain called I'm a Dumb Blonde instead of a real mountain like Mount Everest? I said, Ama de Blom, honey, not I'm a Dumb Blonde. But thank you. You finish your homework. We'll look at Everest. So he did, and we did. And he went to bed. And I was still looking at Everest. And I said, you know what? If this is the real mountain, like the hardest mountain in the whole world in his eyes, I'm going to climb it. And I'm going to show him that no matter what our Everest is, we're capable of summiting it. And so I called a coach and I said, yes, you can get, he can get me ready in time to climb Everest. I said, okay. So he sends me a book in the mail, and the book is about becoming an uphill athlete. And I'm reading the book, and in the front of it, there's this foreword about a lady who received a Guinness World Record for doing something over in the Alps. And I remember thinking, I could have done that. Like, I can suffer. My kids learned how to read on Guinness World Record books. And if I got a Guinness World Record, I would no longer be the uncool homeschooled mom. I will be like the cool mom. And I wanted to be the cool mom because homeschooling was getting exhausting.
Yeah.
And he laughed at me. He's like, okay, we'll think of something. I'm like, all right, fine. Let me know what you think of, but I'm not growing pumpkins or speed eating hot dogs. And he calls me back a few weeks later and he's like, hey, Jen, I have the perfect world record for you. I'm like, okay.
Well,
like, I think you should be the first woman to climb the 7-second summits. I'm like, what are the 7-second summits? I had no idea. He's like, they are the second highest point on each continent that's only been done by one male. It's harder than the first seven. And let's think about it. 7 continents, 7 mountains, 7 children. It sounds like a jackpot.
It was perfect.
I'm like, it does kind of sound like a jackpot. Let me look at it. So I looked at it with my kids and I thought, you know what? I want to do something significant. Like, this sounds significant. So I'm going to say yes. I'd never slept in a tent before. Like, it was a huge undertaking, but very rewarding.
So I'm pretty gobsmacked by what I've been listening to and loads of questions I have in my head. So I find it remarkable that, sorry that you had the accident, first and foremost, but thankfully you've recovered. And a series of conversations lead to this remarkable challenge. Had you done anything remotely similar to this before?
No, I mean, I climbed one mountain before, right? Like one. And I thought it was a great experience, which is why I wanted to climb one for my 40th. But there's something that called me, right? There's something in the pursuit that I was like, okay, you know what? I'm a mom of 7. I have every excuse not to do this, which is why I should do this. Because I want everyone anywhere to say that excuse is something that's your mind's making up to limit you. Your job is to overcome that. And so it really was this whole pursuit of limitations are in your mind. You're capable of more than you think. Step into the journey.
Yeah. And I'm always curious because particularly when we haven't done something before and we decide actually we're going to do this. And then maybe we don't tell family and friends, but family and friends, really? Are you So what was the reaction of family and friends?
Yeah, 100%. Like, so here's, you know how they always say when you're going to step into something big, you're going to like lose people or you're going to lose support from those closest to you. My parents like hung up the phone. Like, no, you're not. You're not. Like, that's the most ridiculous thing we've ever heard you say. Why would you do that? That sounds ludicrous.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is like my coach had me call a couple people that had summited Everest before that he had helped get to the top. So then when I talked to these people that had done Everest, I'm like, they're normal humans. If they can do it, I can do it. Right. And who you spend time with or who you converse with or who you talk to, it matters. Mm. So because I had those conversations with them, I'm like, okay, mom and dad, you're talking from a place of fear.
Yeah.
Because you don't know and you're trying to protect me and keep me safe. And I 100% appreciate that. But I have met people that have climbed Everest. I am totally capable of climbing Everest. I'm going to figure it out. Don't worry about it. And so I was very prepared for them not to be supportive. And of course, those closest to us, once they see us doing the thing and committing to it, and they realize like they either jump on board or they're going to be left behind, they typically jump on board.
Yeah. Yeah. And how inspiring to them as well. Because it wasn't just what I guess I'm sort of comprehending is sometimes when we embark on doing something, which is a challenge, we might, like, I guess at the start, when you thought about doing one mountain, but then you, all of a sudden you're doing seven. And also, and I think for everybody listening, are they on different continents as well?
Yeah. So seven different continents. It only been done by one male before. And so it was just like, it was an unknown. It was a big unknown. But I figured, hey, if it only has been done by one human, one, it can be done because a human did it. And two, if it doesn't get done by me, no one else has done it anyway. So who cares if I fail? At least I tried.
Yeah. And in relation to the training, was it physical? Was it mental? Or what was the sort of the bedrock of the training? What did that look like?
Yeah. The training was a lot mental. Okay. I would say on the mountains, when I see somebody not summit, it's more mental than it is physical.
Okay,
typically, everybody's in physical condition to make it happen. Really? I think a lot of times what happens is, as you know, when I went to climb Everest, Everest wasn't even one of my mountains, right? It wasn't one of the 7 second summits, but I was using Everest as a training ground to climb K2 because K2 is so much harder. And so then for me, Everest wasn't this huge thing because it was, in my mind, it was smaller than what I needed it to be. Right? Because it wasn't one of my summits. But people there had like dreamed of climbing Everest since they were 7 years old. Right? So now all of a sudden they're there, they're climbing Everest, and they're like, oh, wait, I don't want a summit. Like, it's almost like the subconscious is saying, I don't want a summit. Who am I? I've always been the person trying to summit Everest or wanting to summit Everest. I don't know who I am once I'm the person that has summited Everest. I haven't really thought about what that is. And so I think like when we're building businesses or we have families or we're doing these different things, you need to look past the summit.
Yeah.
Who are you past the top? Who are you once you reach that goal? What does that mean? What does that look like? How does that become significant for you so that you continue on your growth pattern and don't just stop?
Yeah, totally. And how long did it take to kind of complete it? I imagine it must have taken a long time. Because you're on seven continents and you're climbing the mountains.
Yes. So I started the pursuit in December of 2020 when countries started to open after COVID, right? So Chile was the first country to open. The second highest point in South America is located in the Atacama Desert there, named Ojos del Salado. So I went to climb that. And then I went to Africa to climb Mount Kenya, which is the second highest point in Africa. Then I went to go climb Everest to train for K2. And then I went to K2. And K2, I did not summit. That was the first mountain I didn't summit on my first attempt.
Okay.
And it was interesting because I was on the mountain. I was 2 days from the summit. A teammate of mine was lower down the mountain. He got caught in an avalanche and died. So we got a radio call that this had happened. And then another team kind of caught up to us and like, hey, do you want to summit with us or do you want to go down with your team? And I remember like there was a part of me that definitely wanted to summit, right? Like it was a lot of money. I came here, I left my kids, like all that kind of stuff. But a bigger part of me is like, no, I need to be here for my team. Like I'm going down the mountain. The mountains will always be here. And I think that's a really important thing when we start our pursuits is who we are as people is way more important than what we achieve. And so I went down to take care of my people. I went home and then I came back to K2 in 2022 because I had to try it again because it's one of my climbs. And when I went back, people knew that I had failed and knew I was coming back and asked me to bring some gear over for another individual to try to summit.
Yeah,
that was from Pakistan because it's very hard for Pakistanis to afford to climb their own peak. So when I came back, I summited in 2022. And then 30 minutes later, the person that I sponsored summited K2 as well, right? And you sit there and you think, man, that obstacle or that failure, or that setback that happened in 2021 that caused me not to summit, I'm so glad I stuck with the pursuit. I'm so glad that I came back because when I came back, so much more was possible.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I ask people when I'm giving a speech, I'm like, is there a time that you've hit an obstacle or you've done a setback and then you quit? Really, when you were still on the climb and the universe was just using you to make more possible. And so we need to, like, sometimes those setbacks happen so that something better can happen for us that we haven't even thought about yet.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think there's definitely a mindset and a opportunity when we don't totally bolt, when we, in order to achieve or to do anything potentially worthwhile, but ambitious, that's in line with our goals and our desires, we will come up against challenges. And when we hit those, when we hit the buffer, so to speak, it's like, how do we stay in pocket? How do we stay in pocket and actually look for the opportunity that exists beyond what's actually happened? Because there always is an opportunity. And I guess your stories are case in point.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I will say, like, when I got into mountaineering, I didn't know that you acclimatized to climb mountains. I thought you just started at the bottom and went to the top. Mm. When I got into mountaineering, I realized, like, when we went to Everest, you climb from base camp up to camp one or camp two. Mm. You hit a point of failure. So your body doesn't want to go anymore because there's not enough oxygen in the air. And you're like, it's very hard. You get to that point of failure. You sit there for like to have lunch, to stay there as long as you can. And then you come back down to base camp. And then over the next 3 days at base camp, your body physiologically change. And you all of a sudden will have more red blood cells so that when you go back up the mountain to camp one or camp two, it's a lot easier because your body has more red blood cells to be able to handle the less oxygenated environment. And I think that's so important as we build our businesses and put our future in play because we're acclimatizing. We're not going to get from point A to the top every single time the first time. We're going to hit points of failure. And those points of failures are opportunities to come back to base camp, take what we've learned, understand what's going on, re-strategize, and be able to go up the mountain further in our next attempt.
Yeah, lots of really aligned business themes that we can take into what you did.
Yeah, definitely.
And just in relation to this remarkable achievement, Did you actually enjoy or get used to climbing mountains? What was that like for you? Was it just a challenge? What I mean by that, not just a challenge because it was a challenge, but was it just really difficult or did you get chances to kind of embrace moments of it and just enjoy it?
No, oh, I absolutely loved it, right? I mean, the fun thing about climbing mountains is that you meet people from all over the world, right? Mm-hmm. It is not just like we're a soccer nation, we're a football nation, or we're this, whatever, like everybody everywhere climbs. So that's super fun because you get to meet people from different parts. You learn about different cultures. You learn about different ways of doing life.
Yeah.
You join together with people you've never met before. Typically, like each time I went to a mountain, I had a different team for the most part that I was climbing with. And you learn how to work with that team. Here's my strengths. Here's your strengths. How do we play to those? How do we unify as a team and move our way up this mountain and achieve this thing together? I mean, big mountains take big teams.
Yeah.
And big goals take big teams. Big companies take big teams to make everything happen. And I just realized, like, it is fun to be a part of a team that's trying to accomplish something and work together to get from where you are to where you want to go.
I was just thinking, I'm thinking about your kids and your family. They must have been so proud of you.
Yeah, you know, like it was really cool. When I went to climb Everest, I had never been away from home for that long. Like I was going to be gone from home for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people are gone to climb Everest for 6 to 8 weeks. Wow. It just depends on where you live and how trained you are. I live at altitude, so I was able to leave a little bit later than other people. But I was nervous for my kids. I brought my mom in, we had a nanny in and everybody kind of helping. But I went to the kids' school and I said, hey, listen, I'm going to be gone climbing Everest. My kids have never been away from me this long. Is it possible for you to just give them a little extra grace? Just be conscientious that they might be a little off their game.
Yeah.
And the school came back to me and said, hey, how about we do a What's Your Everest campaign? And you come in here and teach these kids about goal setting. And we'll line the hallway with a whole bunch of hikers with little flags, and they'll say what their Everest goal is. And then in the front of the school, they had this huge mountain that was symbolizing Everest and a little hiker, because I had a tracking device on me. So then as I moved up and down the mountain, the school moved me up and down the mountain. I could call from base camp and check in with the kids and answer questions. And so then when I went to summit, my whole school summited. Like everybody in town that was supporting me from everywhere, like felt like they summited with me. And it was one of those things where my biggest hesitation about climbing Everest was leaving my kids.
Yeah.
Probably one of the best things that happened to my kids was me going to climb Everest and having them have an entire community step up and support them and realize there's way more than just their mom here that's on their side. And how lucky are they to have that experience?
So literally, when you Mount Everest and summiting, they could track almost.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yep.
Because that's, I could imagine, not just as a child, but even me, if I knew you, I would
All my friends were watching. They could send little messages in like, you're doing it, blah, 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 blah. It was so much fun.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, what was your favorite mountain that on the, seven?
I know everybody asks me this and it's like, what's your favorite kid? Like each mountain was such a unique, special experience. I'm grateful for all of them because I have such amazing memories. I will tell you that going to Antarctica was pretty spectacular and climbing a mountain there was pretty amazing just because there's no place on earth like it. Like Antarctica is its own thing.
Yeah. Remarkable. So because you've done the Seventh Summit Challenge, I was curious. So I just thought of other challenges where there's seven things in. So I'll just read a couple out for you
and see,
see if there's any that grab you. So there's a Seven Wonders Marathon, a marathon that takes the runners to each of the seven wonders of the ancient world. There's a Seven Bridges Walk, which is a charity walk in Sydney, Australia, that crosses seven iconic bridges while supporting cancer research. Let me see another one. I'll give you a third one. Okay, this is an interesting one. Seven Rivers Kayaking Challenge, a kayaking expedition that takes participants through seven different rivers, each with its unique characteristics and difficulties. So there's a few more there, but I just thought I'd give you a flavor of a few.
I love it. You know, I took my daughters to South Africa in March of this past year, and we were climbing a mountain called Table Mountain in Cape Town. So a lot of people hike it. There's a way to rappel it and climb up it. And so we're climbing it, and the coach goes, you do know, this is one of the seven natural wonders of the world. If you want to go take on those next. And I'm like, I'm not saying yes to anything for a year. We'll see what comes up.
Yeah. I know that pretty soon there'll be another challenge. I just sense it. I haven't met you physically, but I just sense the energy from what you've done now and just talking to you now. But what I wanted to ask you about, because so when we're talking and particularly when you mentioned about going into the, to your children's class and talking to them about how they can set goals and how they can, you know, deal with goal setting and so forth. Do you do that for companies? And because I imagine that being a really incredible tool for any business, whether you're a corporate or whether you're even a smaller business.
Yes, absolutely. Like that's one of the fun things that's come out of this. I love public speaking. I had no idea that I did. I love being on stage. I love working with companies, schools, masterminds, and just sharing the story and helping the participants figure out how that story relates to them and how they can improve their skills and become more resilient in their pursuits. It's super fun.
Yeah, I can imagine that being a really, well, so your story is so inspiring. And obviously, bit work is work. And sometimes we can make challenges insurmountable. But when you, someone like you comes in and you've got these wonderful, A, you've got the story, but also you've got these wonderful tools and techniques that we all can employ just to really shrink what we think is something that's quite insurmountable. So, yeah, that was an immediate thought when you were talking about going into your children's classroom. But I was keen to ask you about your book, Breakproof. Could you maybe give us a little bit of detail around that, what we can get from, what we can expect from buying a copy?
Yes, definitely. So halfway through the pursuit, I was eating lunch with a friend that's an author. And nonchalantly, he says, you know, you should write a book. As in, you know, you should order dessert right now. It's time to order dessert. So I'm like, okay, that's a good idea. He's like, your stories are so riveting. And you've done such a good, like a lot of things that happened on the mountain are the same things that happened to me while I was building a business.
Yeah.
Well, it's way more fun to read about them in a mountain pursuit than it is in a business day-to-day pursuit, right? So I started linking these experiences to the mountain expeditions and then giving people takeaways to work with. And I call it breakproof because I feel like in life, we either take a break or we break. At some point, yeah, right? Like a relationship falls apart or something doesn't work. And that break gives us a chance to pause and explore and learn. And it's proof to us to either continue on the pursuit because it's worth it, repair things or do something different because guess what? That's not the mountain we want to climb anymore. And so I combine the two words into break proof. And then the book covers strategies to become resilient to achieve your life goals because whatever we want to achieve, there's going to be things that are going to try to keep us from doing that. Okay, well, hopefully this book helps you see them before they happen. So then you're better prepared. But if they do happen, now when you're in the middle of that break, you have the tools to navigate to get out of it and step into your pursuit even more. Because I'll tell you, I've climbed a whole bunch of mountains now, right? Like the ones that I summited and the ones that were training mountains and all the different things. We don't wave like our flag at the top of the mountain, just because we're at the top of the mountain. Like we wave that flag to signify all the times we said yes when we could have said no.
Yeah.
It's all the times that we wanted to turn around and didn't. Like we continued on. And that's why it's so fun to wave the flag at the top because we overcame and became who we are today. And that's what we're celebrating. And so this book is going to help you, whatever your mountain is, whatever your Everest is or whatever, make that become a reality and help you get there with as much fun as possible.
Yeah, no, I love the analogy of the book.
Yeah.
I love the themes that you put into the book and the real benefits and the real techniques that we can extract and we can use whether we're in business, whether we work, whether it's our own business or even if you work for a company, because even if you work for a company, we've still got a role to play within that. So we've got little goals and little challenges that we still need to overcome. And if there's any people that are mountaineers that maybe are starting out, or even if maybe if you're more experienced, you know, it will all benefit from the analogy of the book. So I love that. As I'm talking, I'm thinking world record holder. Amazing. Do you ever think about that? I'm a world record holder.
You know, it's funny. Like I was really like, it's one of those things that it took me 2.5 years to achieve. So, you know, halfway through, you're like, man, is this ever going to happen? This is like taking forever. And then all of a sudden you have one mountain left and it's almost sad, right? Like, wait, this pursuit's done. This has given me so much focus and purpose and ideas to like, just like form my life around. So when I achieved it, I was super excited. I was a little sad that it was done. I came home to my kids after the last one and my son gives me a hug and he's like, congrats, mom. Yeah. I'm like, thank you. And he goes, Mom, you have bad breath. I'm like, yeah, but on an airplane for like 10 hours. I'm sure I do have bad breath. I'm sorry. Right. So it's just so funny because we can do these heroic things, but we're still human.
Kids just bring you right back down.
They bring you right back to the human aspect of it. And the reality is that I'm a mom. Yeah. Right. I'm an everyday person. I hadn't really been into mountaineering. I said yes to the challenge. I picked myself up during the entire pursuit every time I wanted to turn around or give up or say not this time. And if I can do it, then anybody listening is more than capable. And that's what gets me excited, because I think back to 2018 when I almost died. And if I would have died, I think of all the things that wouldn't have happened. Yeah. And I know this book's important to get out to the world because I want people to live with that kind of significance.
Yeah.
Like I want them to say, hey, I'm going to step into who I am. And for the next 5 years, I'm going to give it everything I can and just see what happens. Because I promise you, the whole world's going to benefit from whatever pursuit you take on.
Yeah. No, I love that analogy. And I'll just say it again, I love the analogy because I think to be able to have the lens that you have now, where you view life, the word that you used there, I want to live a life of significance. And it's very easy to fall into that almost malaise where we just coast. We kind of, you know, we're not doing anything remotely, well, significant that we can really stretch ourselves and be proud of. And that's why I think your book is really important, because people have no idea what they're capable of.
We're capable of so much more than we think. 100%. So just learning how to lean into that and keeping stretching that piece of us is where the magic happens.
And so I guess a couple of questions for the book. Where can people find the book?
So the best place to go is my website. So jendrummond.com. And then from there, you'll have a link that will bring you to Amazon and you can order it there.
Okay.
And then when you're at my website too, you'll also see all my social media handles. So if there's a certain platform that you like to utilize, reach out, say hi, introduce yourself. I love connecting and building community. So I'd love to hear from you.
Okay, cool. So perfect. So I was going to ask you the next place website. We got it. So Jen, this has been amazing. I really loved this discussion. Inspired. I was inspired before I met you, even more inspired now. I don't think I'll quite be doing that challenge yet, but but at least I know the world record holders. If I do know, I know who to come to and speak to and get advice from.
Perfect.
And final question is, this is a recurring question. So if you could invite three inspirational people for dinner, they can be alive or past, who might you invite?
Yeah, you know, this is going to be a funny answer. So one, I'd like to invite my grandpa that I never got to meet, Rex. I just like to hear his story of everything, because you only get to hear about him. I want to hear it from him firsthand. I did a report on a lady named Harriet Tubman, who is a huge influence back when slavery was in place and like helped save a ton of people out of slavery. I'd love to actually talk to her, because I've only ever read about her and wrote a report about her in third grade. And I've been fascinated with her since. Yeah. And then I'd love to go back to like Egypt and meet Cleopatra. Was it like when women were so honored in the head of society? Because that's not the world we live in now. And just understand it from someone firsthand.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be a phenomenal dinner. And I think they would love to have you there based on what you've done today. So Jen, thank you so much. Really enjoyed this discussion. I'm actually excited to think about what you're going to be doing next. I know it's going to be something remarkable. It's going to be something remarkable. So maybe we can do this again when you're going, we'll stay in touch for sure. Decided, definitely let me know. I would love to have another conversation with you. So thank you so much for your time. It's been amazing.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. And thank you everybody for tuning in to this episode of My Perfect Failure. We're always looking to grow the show, so please do share this episode far and wide, particularly if you know anybody that is embarking on a challenge or needs maybe a little bit of a nudge. Please do share this episode with Jen, with them. And your feedback is most welcome. So we're keen to hear about the things you like and equally the things you don't possibly like. So you can find me at paul@myperfectfailure.com or via the contact page on the website. So take care for now. Bye.
Thanks for listening to My Perfect Failure podcast. Be sure to visit www.myperfectfailure.com to join the conversation. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Look out for our next episode.